Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You give me one shot here on a blue chip stock. Believe me, Kevin. The only problem you're going to have is that you didn't buy more. Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles.
What's going on, NBA draft fans? Your boys are back. The Wolves of Ball Street, your favorite draft analyst, your friends from the Draft DAC. NBA Draft Show on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed. My name is Corey Tulba, and I am here as always with my co-host and good friend, Albert Garbage Time Gim. Albert, how are we doing today?
My physical body isn't doing great. Got a little bit of a cold. It's not COVID, though, so if you guys are worried about that, I don't have that, but did catch some sort of cold. But other than that, my mind is bright and aware and excited to be here, and I'm ready to rock.
Which is a good thing, because we need your insight, because you took a scouting trip recently. And before we get into our little game where we select a five-man team based off of the draft DAC stock market prices that we set for the players last week, I want to hear about your scouting trip out to see the UCLA men's basketball team, because there's a good number of prospects that were in that game and you were there up close. You took a video of Amari Bailey shooting a jump shot that has surpassed 300,000 views on TikTok, which is pretty dope. Follow us on TikTok at No Ceilings NBA. And yeah, so where do you want to start? Because there are a number of guys on that UCLA team that are interesting scouting dudes.
I think we can kind of wrap two guys into one by talking about the new incoming players in terms of Adembona and Amari Bailey. They were pretty damn interesting to watch.
All right. So let's talk about Amari Bailey first. We mentioned him, the jump shot. A lot of people were surprised that he cut his hair. That was a big talking point on TikTok. But what was it about Bailey that you either liked or didn't like? And I guess we should say, did you like him? Any more or less after viewing him? Because that's somebody you wrote about and you've been high on.
Yeah. I don't want to say that I like him less, but I did start to see more of the critiques and areas of concern that I think other people have had about him. Obviously, I had Bailey much higher than others. And I also do think situationally there at UCLA, he is going to be in an interesting situation where I don't think Mick Cronin's going to trust him enough for him to be making a ton of decisions on his own as a playmaker on the ball. But I think it is going to be more of a shared role that he's going to be playing with Tiger Campbell and Jaime Jaquez Jr. in terms of the creation aspect. Because one of the things that I wrote about Bailey in my preseason thing about him was that I'm actually high on his passing. I think he's going to be a good passer, and he's going to show eventually in time more flashes of that passing. The only issue is the situation that he's in there at UCLA. And from what I saw, even from that night on Friday night, watching them play live, he's not going to get the lion's share of the creation on that team. So I think to answer your question, Corey, I think I still like Bailey a lot, but there were certain things that I saw that had me a little bit lower on him now than I was about a week ago.
Yeah, I know he's because I liked his passing flashes too, and going and watching the pre-college stuff. But the playmaking is something he struggled with early on, as far as balancing, like making plays and then making the right decision. He's been pretty turnover prone early on. But, you know, for point guards, it's hard jumping up levels and you have the ball in your hands and you're making those decisions and you're adjusting to the speed and the talent and the physicality. So, you know, it's nothing to panic about this early on in the season. It's just something to look out for as we progress. What did you think of his shot? Because it's another point of emphasis for him that is, I think, going to determine, you know, where his potential is.
I think the best way for me to kind of characterize where his shooting, well, not care, but to define kind of where his shooting is right now is he's a bit of ways away right now as a shooting. The best way to put it is that his jumper needs a good amount of work. Even in the videos that I posted, you know, of Bailey shooting and warmups, you can see that there are some moving pieces to his shot. Things are not super compact or super clean right now. But overall, though, the thing that I did want to say is there is a spirit of aggression that he has that I also wrote about in my preseason thing that I got to see up close in person, where there is a desire for him to get shots up. He's not shy about it. He does try to get to the basket as well and use his athleticism and his physicality to finish over even larger guys as well. So that part I did enjoy. But in terms of the shooting specifically, I think he's going to have to just he's just gonna have to trap himself, lock himself up in a gym over the summer heading into the draft and just put up a trillion shots per day, because I think the base and the foundation can be there. I don't think by any means his shot is broken at all. I think it's a matter of reps and practice, and with reps and practice, I think he can be a very good shooter, but where he is right now, he does need a good amount of work.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how that part of his game develops as we go through the year, because I, you know, there's little things that are functionally slightly off, but it's nothing damaging or broken. And if there's one thing that we know about NBA teams, that, you know, they're going to work on shots with these guys and get them to a passable level. Now, the other question marks with his game is, if he gets a shot to a passable, even good level, is that enough to, you know, kind of, I guess, work around any of his other shortcomings? So that's something that we'll be looking out for. A guy I'm very interested in is Adem Bona, because he's somebody that I am a little bit cautious of. One, just given his role, the rawness that, you know, we've seen this movie before with Peyton Watson last year, with a really athletic, raw, you know, kind of big guy. I didn't necessarily always love watching him at Prolific. You know, Trey White was the guy who always like caught my attention in a good way there. And I felt like Bona, even though he would pop every once in a while, I had questions of, is he always on the floor? Like, I didn't always feel him. I've heard that he had really impressive moments in the overseas stuff, which I didn't watch. I'm familiar with this film just from Prolific and like All-Star games and stuff. So give me your impression of him, man. One, what does he look like physically up close?
Physically, he's gigantic. He looks every bit of like 6'9", 6'10", great frame on him. Arms are gigantic. Shoulders are huge. Good chest on the guy. So physically he looks great. In warmups, he got off the floor really easily. He's got some actually decent like vertical pop to him. Especially like with a running start, he can really get up, but even like, flat footed, he can get up pretty quickly, which I was impressed by. But Corey, what you said in terms of your evaluation from him at Prolific was essentially what I saw in person at UCLA. So that was actually Bona's first game of the season. He had missed the first game, so he came in for the second game, got the start and everything. But he struggled a little bit with fouls. He was in a little bit of foul trouble early on. I think raw is a great way to describe where he's at right now. Overall, in the, like, the very, like, I don't know, for most of the game, it was hard to feel his presence. So I think you're really accurate in saying that, because a lot of times I'm watching the game and he would be on the floor and I had no idea he was on the floor. And also it could be a part of like the way that UCLA was running things. I don't know. The way that Jalen Clark was playing defensively, the types of steals and runouts that they were getting, maybe that's why also I didn't feel him in the beginning. But overall, Corey, I really do agree with your evaluation of him, because I think so. In my opinion, he might be a two-year guy is how I feel right now because of how raw he is. But the tools are there. And the way that he was warming up was really good. He was really into it. He was getting really aggressive. All the post-up stuff, I shot some of it. He was like really getting into it, getting after it, trying to be aggressive and trying to take all those reps very seriously. So that is good. But in terms of his development, I think a second year might do him well, but who knows? You know, maybe he just explodes over the course of this first year and then, you know, he goes on to the NBA. But just from what I saw in night one, I think raw is a really good word to describe where he's at.
Now, you mentioned that he's, you know, had some foul trouble. And I think when you're conversely looking at big men, when we were talking about like Amari Bailey might be struggling with decision making because of the speed of the game, a lot of times young bigs get into foul trouble. Do you think his foul trouble was more of a like him being over aggressive or him just being like a step late on rotations and kind of adjusting to the speed of the game? Like, where do you think he was struggling on the defensive side of the ball to where he did end up being a little over eager, overzealous and picking up some fouls?
In my opinion, unfortunately, it was a mix of both, where it was his first game. I think he really wanted to prove himself. I think he wanted to live up to, you know, his standing as like, you know, a highly touted new guy. So he was definitely trying to be aggressive, but also, Corey, he was late on some stuff. And it, overall, like the speed of the game was something that you could feel that he was trying to catch up to. I think some rust might have been involved with him, you know, it being his first game, whatever. Mick Cronin was really on him a couple times, just absolutely shouting in his face. And the resounding thought in my mind all night long was, wow, like the Mick Cronin experience as a player must be not the easiest, because he is shouting in their faces and pointing in their faces. So I was like, I almost felt bad for some of the kids, but Corey, I think it was a mix of both where, yeah, he was a little overzealous at times, you know, because it was his first game, but also just the speed of the game. I think he was catching up just a little bit.
Yeah. I think where you said he might be a two-year guy, I could see that outcome. I could also see like him really impressing in an empty gym and pre-draft workouts and, you know, some team either at the end of the first or in the second, you know, gives him a look just based on his profile, maybe thinking, why let him play a second year in college when we can get him in our G League program and let him develop with our staff in our system and see what we have on him. But I could see either outcome with him. So finally, I think the last draft prospect that we have from UCLA is our guy, Jaime Jaquez Jr., who, you know, we have some skeptics at No Ceilings with Jaime, but we were fans of him last year. We even dedicated an episode to him on the old draft act feed. So how did Jaime look?
He looked like an NBA player. Yeah. Is how I want to put it, Corey. He was extremely mature. He was never pressing. He was never sped up. He knew exactly what he was doing at all times, and he looked very comfortable with what he was being asked to do. The shooting range looks like it's like very comfortably extended out to 3-point range now. He puts them up really comfortably. It looks fantastic. The rotation on his jump shot looks absolutely picturesque. I really do think he's going to become a high-level shooter. Obviously, I'm not saying he's going to be an elite shooter, but he's really going to be able to shoot the ball. His physicality has held up. He looks just as strong as he did last year. His upper body, fantastic. He played really hard. He showed some more growth. He already did last year, but even more growth with the ball in his hands. He just looks extremely comfortable. Even, you know, hunting his own shot, none of it looks forced. None of it looks uncomfortable for him at all. I really enjoyed it. Some of the passing that he was doing as well. Just overall, just felt like It literally just felt like I was watching an NBA player play with college guys. And I'm not even saying like he's some superstar that I'm going to have going in the top 10, but he was really, really good. And one of my favorite guys to watch.
I mean, he's a senior. He's played in big games. He knows the system in and out. He knows the speed of the game. And he's a guy like, you know, you see like him checking Paul George in summer workouts. So, I mean, I think when you get to scrimmage with guys like, you know, Paul George and all those guys who are going to those runs and you're guarding them, it's like, you know, somebody from whoever the fuck State University, you know, that you're checking up. It's like, yeah, it's a little bit of drop off in talent there. But I think that Jaime is like one of those guys where you're just going to be like, the Grizzlies drafted him and he's playing rotation minutes right away and he's helping them win. And like, he's playing off Ja so seamlessly and he's connecting and moving the ball. And like, he's just one of those guys. Like he's one of those guys that get passed up on for somebody who you're betting on a talent late, when the more likely outcome is that Jaime is going to be like a guy who could help you versus, you know, the home run swing. He might be, you know, a single, but that single might drive in a run. It might not just be him getting on base. He might be, you know, driving in a run there. So I can't wait to watch the entirety of the UCLA team because I love the mix of young guys and veterans that they have. And I think that's going to be one of the interesting things to monitor as we move forward.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like really quickly before we wrap on this, I did want to say watching Jaquez, it did remind me of like Quentin Grimes going after Kai Jones, you know, that type of thing. Like it's going to be one of those where he's going to be an NBA contributor, maybe possibly from day one, and teams are just going to pass up on him because of exactly what you said, right? One of these high ceiling guys, low floor guys. Did want to say though, Corey, just before, like, you know, we totally wrap on this part, I feel like UCLA watching that team, one of my concerns for them is their backup bigs behind Bona. Their bigs behind Bona are not great. It was pretty rough to watch, to be honest. So, you know, when we think long term, like, you know, tournament type of long term, their lack of dependable bigs behind Bona is going to be a concern, especially if he's going to be in foul trouble. And the last thing that I want to say is I really, really, really like Jalen Clark a lot. He legitimately looks and feels like an NBA level defender right now. The stuff that he was doing with his length and anticipation and just like he just knew where to be always, and it was fantastic. And it looks like he's definitely grown as a shooter as well from what I saw in warmups and in the game. So I'm not saying he's going to be like a guy that gets drafted for sure, but he might. Like if he keeps this up, he legitimately might be like an early second round. Maybe, I mean, if all goes well, late first. I don't see that. I think he could be a second round guy, though, and a guy that NBA teams actually don't feel bad about drafting because of his size and his length and his defense.
He's got 13 steals through three games.
He had 4 or 5 the night I went, so it was pretty insane.
Yeah, he had 4 the night you went. He had 7 the night prior. He's got a couple of blocks. He's got 9 assists. Like, he's definitely a maybe we should keep an eye on what's happening here type of guy. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we will get into a fun exercise. Okay. We are back. And, you know, I didn't want to cover a prospect in depth this week because we do have college basketball back, but it's early and the games are, you know, cupcake schedules right now. And it feels a little bit early to just go really in depth on a guy that we're probably going to want to cover later on as well. So what I thought we would do is piggybacking off of last week when we broke down the top 40 prospects based on their draft stock that we put up on NoCeilingsNBA.com. When we release that, we always have a graphic with a build your team for $15 where we go through different tiers and you get $15 and you can you know, go through different combinations to build your team. I thought it would be fun to do that exercise live and kind of break down some of these guys just with short little brief breakdowns based on what we saw early on so far. So I'm going to give you the five tiers, the prices, and for anyone following along at home, you are more than welcome to build your own team and respond to us with your own team. So in the $5 blue chip tier, we have Victor Wembanyama, who we have exiled from this exercise because I think we would both pick Victor pretty easily here. So we were not going to be able to use Victor, but Victor is in the blue chip tier. We have Scoot Henderson, Amen Thompson, Nick Smith Jr., and Cam Whitmore. In the $4 large cap tier, we have Dariq Whitehead, Asar Thompson, Keyonte George, Dylan Mitchell, and Jairus Walker. In the $3 growth tier, we have Derek Lively, Kaysen Wallace, Khalil Ware, Anthony Black, and Brandon Miller. In the $2 international tier, we have Ryan Rupert, Arthur Kaluma, Tyrese Proctor, Nikola Jurišić, and Leonard Miller. And in the $1 penny stock tier, we have Marcus Sasser, Chris Livingston, Grady Dick, Jet Howard, and Daron Holmes. Again, these tiers were built off of the stock price that these prospects opened up on based on the, you know, conglomeration of media outlets and where they had them on their boards. So, Albert, I'm going to let you go first. You had $15. You couldn't take Victor Wembanyama. Who did you take at your price points to get to $15?
Okay, so first off, I exercised some financial responsibility by saving a dollar.
Wow.
I spent $14 and I saved a dollar by, you know, I don't know. I just want to hold an extra dollar just in case. So here we go. My $5 guy took Scoot Henderson.
Okay.
My $4 guy took Jairus Walker. My $3 guy, and I don't feel great about this, but I wanted a center, and I don't know why, so I took Khalil Ware. Mm-hmm. And then I took two $1 guys in Grady Dick and Jet Howard was what I did. And then I have a dollar extra to grab someone else later on if I need, you know?
All right, so I love that you were fiscally responsible because who knows, maybe you can carry that dollar over for the next time we do this exercise at the next update. I did spend $15. I didn't take any $5 tier players.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I took two $4 tier players. I took Jairus Walker. So we have overlap there. And I took Keyonte George.
Nice.
I took two $3 tier players. I took Brandon Miller. And I took Khalil Ware. And then I took one $1 player and I took Marcus Sasser. So we have a little bit of overlap, which I expected. Honestly, I probably expected a little bit more overlap. So I'm pretty happy with this outcome. We have Jairus Walker and Khalil Ware. So we have the same front court. Why did you take both of those guys?
Well, first off, I took Ware because the more I watch Ware, the more I'm like, well, this guy is interesting, is the resounding thought that I keep having as I watch him play. Do I feel like I love him? No.
Yeah.
Do I feel like I love Derek Lively either? No. But there's something in my gut. And Corey, I won't even lie, dude. Probably a big part of it is because you're the one who told me to go back and watch more Ware. So maybe that's why I feel this way. But I like Ware. Like I like how he moves. And I think that's important. Right, the fluidity to his game. Not that I don't like how Lively moves, but there's something about Ware that I like. But I also like this pairing of Ware and Jairus Walker, just because Jairus Walker is going to be the Mr. Do-It-All on my squad. He's going to be a guy who is going to be able to give Scoot a breather once in a while by creating for him. He's going to be a defensive stalwart for us, like absolutely one of the pillars of our team defensively. He's going to be able to score more than enough, you know, for us to support the rest of the squad. So I just felt like putting him next to Khalil Ware, where if Ware gets into foul trouble and I need to play Walker at the five, I can afford to do that. But also them together on the floor, like Walker with his playmaking and passing and ball handling with a guy like Ware. Like, what if they just run big, big pick and roll? Like, that's fun. I'm very excited in that.
That is fun. I like that.
Yeah, that's why I went ahead with those two guys.
Yeah, I very similarly. And I think with Khalil Ware, I feel like he's moving a lot more fluidly, consistently. And seeing that, and again, like, this is something that you see with young guys, man. It sometimes just out of nowhere, it clicks. Like, that's how fast development happens when you go from like high school to the next level, or even, you know, junior to senior year. Sometimes we see it, you know, freshman year to sophomore year for returners. Like, at this age, sometimes things just click and you just jump up a level. With Khalil Ware, I feel like his movement, like, he had some nice possessions out on the perimeter. And I think what people are underselling with him a little bit is he's fucking huge. He is huge, man. And when he contests shots and he uses the full length of that reach, it's really, really tough to get a clean look off of him. He had good moments in the pick and roll. There's this beautiful possession where he was in a drop, played the cat and mouse. The guard kept the ball and he just swatted it, like the layup, just swallowed it up. There was another possession on the perimeter where he switched onto a guard, forced him into a tough shot, which I think ended up in an air ball. His closeouts, he got his hands on a couple. And again, this competition is not the greatest competition in the world that he's playing. And a lot of these guys are going to get wake-up calls very, very soon on that talent level. But I thought that he displayed some stuff. A couple of passing flashes, the offense in and out, which I'm expecting, especially because, you know, I don't think he has NBA level, high level playmaking with that Oregon team. And I think at the NBA level, he's going to be a guy that you set up. Like, his role is he's going to be a dive man, a pick and pop guy, very simple actions. So I'm not too concerned with anything more than just like consistent NBA level flashes from him this year. But the defense is stuff that he is going to have to prove. And so far he has. So we'll see what happens when he plays tougher guys, but I liked what I've seen so far. And, you know, for $3, I think fitting him in there with no Wembanyama is good value. Jarris, I think he's shown what we've known for a while. You know, I think he's going to have inconsistent scoring outputs this year, but Houston doesn't need nor want him to be a big time scorer. They want him to be a defensive destroyer and just a cog of their offense. That's what they want from him, and that's what he's gonna do. He did have a 23 point game. He knocked down a couple of threes, and I think that offensive role will expand as the season goes on and he gets more comfortable. But he's just defensively, he's everything you want. That Houston team is nasty. They're just nasty people on a basketball court. And he's the guy I'm most excited for to keep watching this year, especially because, you know, for me, I got my $1 value out of Marcus Sasser, who I'm taking as well. And for my point of attack defense there, and also shooting to, you know, because Khloe Ware is a theoretical shooter, and Jarris Walker is a shooter that, you know, I don't mind him shooting when he's open, but no one's going to call him a knockdown guy. I needed a knockdown guy, and I got his partner in Marcus Sasser for $1. He's considered a penny stock, but as you know, I called out last week, I think there's a shot. My hot take was he's going to be a lottery pick, which I might look, you know, very foolish on later in the year, but that's my hot take. It's early in the year, and I'm throwing him out there. So that was my first backcourt guy. You went with Scoot Henderson, which is a, you know, obviously incredible decision on your part.
Oh God.
Have you been watching any of the Scoot stuff lately?
I've been trying. I'm not going to lie and say I've seen all of it, but no, I definitely have seen some of it. And Corey, I don't know how you feel about it, but for me, I feel like, you know, we talked about how this might be the G League Ignite's like worst roster in terms of talent overall. Mm-hmm. And the more I watch them play, the more I agree with you. But also it gets me excited because I feel like this is the team that Scoot needed for him to continue to grow and to flash all of his game. Like recently he had that 16 assist game. Very nice. That's really, really nice, right? Like you want that. But also like the thing that I've enjoyed, Corey, is that he is not being shy about putting up the mid-range and the three-point jump shots. I want him to continue to do it. Like that's something we've both harped on for so long for a lot of these prospects is get the shots up, dude. That's the only way we can really see where you're actually at is for you to be courageous, man. Do it. Put the shots up. And I like that he's doing it. I like that he's creating. Metcalf wrote a great piece about his playmaking, which I 100% agree on. That, yeah. And for us, Corey, we talked about it as well. The processing speed of that guy, of Scoot Henderson, and the things that he could do with the ball in his hands in terms of creating for others, the nuance, the timing, all that stuff. Fantastic. So for me, grabbing Scoot there, I know he's expensive at $5, but I have no problem because I ended up with the second and third guy on my big board on my squad. And I feel great about it, you know, especially with Scoot.
You could have paid $6 for Scoot.
Oh, you're right.
You were fiscally responsible, but no, he's worth every penny, man. And what's, I mean, so impressive about him. I think he's been, three of the last four games, he's been over 25 points. And the game that he was under, I think, was the 16 assist game. Right. So he's still, he's generating a fuck ton of points. He's playing with so much pace. Our guy Mojave King coming along. He's had some, he's looking pretty good. He's looking pretty good. He's very interesting. Keep him on your radar. But Scoot is the perfect guy for a guy like that because he's made every pass in the book. His playmaking is so damn impressive. And when I watched him last year, that stood out. And when I wrote about him earlier this year, over the summer, some of the decisions and reads that he made as a 17-year-old, like, it's not even like all of these reads are stuff that like is new to his bag. He was making some of these reads last year as a 17-year-old pro. So imagine like when he has seen everything there is to see, and he's 23 or 24. Imagine the control of the offense that he's going to have, because it's so rare for a guy who's that athletic to be able to control the pace this early in their career and not want to go 100 miles an hour all the time and learn how to play at different speeds and know where different guys are on the floor. And sometimes he's making these incredible passes because he's able to make like improvisational reads at the last second. But a lot of times he's setting that up and he's fooling the defense and using his athletic tools to leverage all of these passing windows. So he is just a special, special player. And like for him, you know, and we talk about this with Amen Thompson a little bit, like no one's going to be able to stay in front of him. Right. So he's always going to be able to leverage these opportunities, even if the shot doesn't drop and he doesn't have a consistency with that shot. But the difference is with him versus Amen, in my opinion, is that I trust his shot way more both now and in the future. He's already been proficient in the mid range. And, you know, so even if he never extends that range out to the 3-point line, at least he has that in between area covered. But as that continues to grow, he's going to be unguardable. He is going to be unguardable. He does the things on the defensive side of the ball. So $6, throw your extra dollar, give Scoot a bonus.
If I can really quickly, Corey, I just want to piggyback off of what you said. You said that you just said that he's proven himself in the mid range. Of course he has. He continues to take those shots and they go in. And I love the way that his shot goes in. Is that even a thing, Corey? I don't know. For me, it's like the
most
way that
definitely.
The ball, yeah, right. The way that the ball goes in when he shoots is so pure. And it's like, damn, like I love that. But the biggest thing is going back to when he played against Victor. In those games before he got hurt, but in that first game, the intensity and the dog in him, yeah, right? That everyone wants to talk about. He's got that dog in him. He absolutely 1,000,000,000% has it, which makes me believe, Corey, if he's putting up the volume now in the G League and he has that type of competitive spirit, then every part of me wants to believe that he's going to become a really good 3-point shooter as well. Like He wants it more. He's going to figure it out. He absolutely has the drive to become a better player. And you've just mentioned it. Look at his growth from 17 to 18 in the G League. He's grown right before our eyes. So to think about that type of growth and the desire that he has, I think with where he is as a shooter already from the mid-range, I think he's going to become a good three-point shooter. Like I just have to believe it, considering all that I've seen from him as a competitor. And the mechanics, I think, are there too. I think he's going to be a good shooter. So did want to throw that in there just because I think that's a big part of his evaluation as well. The kid just really cares, which I think is important.
Yeah, caring and giving a shit is most definitely important. He has all of the intangibles. So it's like he's so talented, but he also has the intangibles. And that's what makes him rare, right? Like, is he generational? I don't know. I think the bar for guard play is so high. SGA right now is doing just truly miraculous things on the court. Like, that one will haunt me to the grave, where I was like, that guy was selected exactly where he should have been. And it's like, wrong. Wrong. That guy is unbelievable. So like I mean, we saw Darius Garland. What do you have, a 27-point fourth quarter or something? Yeah. Like, Ja Morant is averaging 1 million points and 1 million assists a game. The barrier for guard play right now, it's so high. It's so high. So do I think Scoot is generational? I don't know. I think that we might be entering a generational crop of guard play more than anything else, but he is easily worth the number one pick in most other drafts. So you cannot fault spending every bit of that $5 on Scoot Henderson.
Yeah, 100%. We've got some great guards.
All right. You also took Grady Dick for your backcourt.
And Jet Howard. Well, yeah, backcourt.
Yeah. For your wings, your wingy guys, what was it about Grady Dick and Jed Howard, besides the value of them being listed at $1 with their draft stock right now? Because I think Jed Howard's draft stock is going to drastically change in the next update. We'll see with Grady Dick, but he had quite the debut for himself. So where were you at with Grady Dick before the season started, and where are you with him now?
I think where I'm at with Grady Dick hasn't changed that much. I think his role is very much defined. I think he's going to be a great catch and shoot shooter from three. I think he's going to be relied upon to be a sniper from the outside who potentially maybe could do a little bit more, but his main role is, hey dude, be good off coming screens. And when you get your opportunities, hit your open shots, like shoot the crap out of the three ball. And I think he's done that so far. And I think he will continue to do that. So I think for me, my evaluation is pretty much the same. I think I have him in my 20s. And then Jed Howard, I think. So the reason why I went with these two guys, Corey, was the rationale is, okay, I have my big who's going to dive to the hoop. And then I have Scoot and Jarris who are going to be elite level passers. Well, let me pair them with some, you know, wing shooters who are going to be able to cash in on those opportunities that Scoot and Jarris are going to create. So that's why I went with Howard and Dick. Obviously, Dick is the better shooter, but I think Howard's going to be a good shooter as well. And he's got good wing size. And I think he's going to continue to grow as a defender as well. So yeah, I think that was my rationale. I just wanted to put two cheap, low-end dollar shooters with some great creators on my squad.
Yeah, and I think that Jet and Grady Dick both have some passing juice too, right? Like they're Jet's shown some stuff in the pick and roll. Outside of him like catching fire in a couple of games, he's shown some stuff, like not high level like weak side hits necessarily, but like definitely being able to make pocket passes smoothly, softly. And he's fucking huge. He's a big dude,
big boy.
Like he looked big at IMG, but he looks really big now. I think I'm a little higher now on Grady Dick than I was preseason. I think he chose the perfect team for him. The supporting cast, I don't want to say it's the supporting cast, but the roster that they have in Kansas is, they just complement each other so well. Very unselfish guys, a lot of guys who could play multiple positions and play on or off the ball. So I think Grady Dick not being relied upon to be that Gatorade player, the national Gatorade player of the year, where it's like, can this guy be the best player in, you know, on his team offensively and carry that load? I think the pressure is off of him to do that because he has so many other weapons all around. And now he can just find himself perfectly in, like you said, a defined role and focusing on his strengths and not necessarily hiding his weaknesses, but his weaknesses aren't as apparent as they might be if, you know, he was the number one guy on some other school where it was like his role is so defined as the number one guy and he has to be the guy who is creating all of his offense for the team. Otherwise, the team has no shot. Like, there's definitely a first round case for him. And I mean, if the shooting, if he's around 40%, he's definitely going to get top 20 looks, you know, as we approach June. For me, swinging back to my team, I have Keyonte George at $4 and Brandon Miller at $3. And I so happily took Keyonte George at $4 because he has been everything I thought he could be. You know, we covered Keyonte early on with our guy Laro, who hopped on. Shout out to Laro and his new venture at Swish Theory. I just think that he has the total package offensively as a scorer. And now through three games, I believe he's got 20 assists and he's showing the playmaking stuff. I mean, if he's going to be a guy that could be around 4 to 5 assists per game this year on top of his potential, where I think, you know, he's going to be a 20 plus point per game scorer in the NBA who's shooting around 40% on high volume on tough looks and can also D up at the point of attack. And because he's got such a good frame, body up and maybe guard up a spot or two. Oh boy, he'll live up to the hype. And so far, again, it's against not the best competition that he's going to face all year. So let's see if that playmaking translates as the competition jumps. But the looks that he's made, he's been doing it consistently, whereas we saw flashes here and there of him doing it at IMG. He's done it consistently through three games. I think you've seen more of the playmaking stuff as a total consistent package than you did most of the time when he was at IMG. But man, that kid on or off the ball next to whoever, and Flagler and Keyonte is going to be my favorite backcourt of the year. And heading to the YouTube chat for those watching live, D Jones says, as a Knick fan, I'm starting to look at the draft now. I would love Keyonte at the 2. We'll see if the Knicks are going to be in position for Keyonte George. I think they're going to win too many games to be in position to draft him, but you can never go wrong with that kind of shooting. And, you know, offensively, him and Jalen Brunson would be a fun pairing together next to each other. A lot of Knicks fans probably would say, if you're taking Keyonte, you're probably giving up on the Emmanuel Quickley experiment. And I don't think a lot of Knicks fans feel that way quite yet, but drafting Keyonte for a team like the Knicks, to me, would signify a lot of changes because things get murky. Then you have Quentin Grimes, then you have RJ. What do you do with Quickley? There'd be a lot of moving pieces with a guy like Keyonte George for the Knicks. But what have you seen from Keyonte early on that has you encouraged?
First off, man, the Knicks were in a really strange place. So let's leave the Knicks out of this. I feel like, Corey, ultimately, this Knicks roster is going to look pretty different in a couple of months. I feel
it's not time to panic. They have a lot of assets. Should they have gone in for Donovan Mitchell? Probably.
I think we have like 10 tradable draft picks right now. So
yeah,
something's going to happen. And we have all these young guys and we've got Julie. So a lot's going to happen. So Knick fans out there, just let's wait till we get to that time of the year. But overall with Keyonte, I did watch his first game. I've been able to watch a little bit here and there. But Corey, I think essentially Keyonte went out there and was like, you know what? I'm going to make all my believers look really smart.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. Like, I feel like all
I'm going to look, I'm going to make all my haters like Tyler Metcalf look really, really dumb. Known hater, Tyler Metcalf.
Shouts to Tyler Metcalf for having him 97th on his board.
we're just kidding.
Yeah, we're just kidding. We're only off by a couple.
But we're serious. Yeah.
Just not kidding. But okay. So with Keyonte, I feel like he's doing everything that we said he was good at really well. And then the things where we're like, oh, you know, like he's shown flashes. He's like, cool, I'm going to take those flashes and just add them to my arsenal. So like his playmaking, I think what we talked about when we did his pod, we were like, yeah, like the kid, he can pass, but like, we don't know what that's going to look like. Is he? And then he walks in and he's like averaging 7 assists a game or something. So good on you, Keyonte. I'm really loving what I'm seeing so far. Obviously, the kid's going to play hard. He's going to shoot the ball really well. And then if the playmaking continues to go in this trajectory, then what are we even talking about? Like he's going to be a really high end guard that a lot of teams are very comfortably going to be able to take in the top 5 and not even blink at it. And he's going to be a great, great pick. So, you know, we have to go back to the comps that we made for him. And I think he very much could potentially become that type of player if things continue to go the way that they're going right now. And so obviously, Corey, like we were saying, as a kind of foundation for all the players right now, they're not playing against the hardest competition, but hey, tough competition is on its way now, and things are going to heat up a little bit, and I'm really excited to see how he continues to play and goes against, you know, as he goes against, you know, better and harder competition.
Another guy whose draft stock is about to heat up after his first couple of games. You wrote about him at NoCeilingsNBA.com. I've had him, I think we both had him as top 5 guy before it was cool. We're talking about Brandon Miller from Alabama. He has looked phenomenal. You know, his first game didn't shoot it well from behind the arc, but put in 14 and 14. 14 boards is some serious shit. That you got to go and play hard for 14 boards. Unless you're Andre Drummond and they just come your way. You just gobble them up. Which, shout out to Andre Drummond. Been a pretty good piece for the Bulls this year. Second game, knocked down 4 threes. Deep threes, off the bounce threes, catch and shoot threes. He's getting to his spots in the mid-range. He's showing passing flashes. Defensively, he's playing hard. He's in the right spots. He's making guys work. He's doing everything I wanted him to do to not make me look insane for having him in the top 5 early on when he was a $3 piece in our exercise because he ended up at 15 on the draft stock market set by this conglomeration of boards. So, man, this is another kid, like, if he keeps going and that shot making continues to evolve and the playmaking continues to evolve and he's knocking down 3-point shots and he's playing defense, he's another guy that's going to be hard to keep him out of the top 5. So the top of this draft is loaded, man. Talk to me about Brandon Miller.
Corey, you and I, we don't like throwing the generational word out there a lot, but
no.
Considering the level of prospects that we have in this draft class, and if they all hit their 1% outcomes, this might be a generational draft, the way that things are going. And Brandon Miller is just one example of that. He's a guy that you put me onto pretty early, and I absolutely fell in love with his game. And then I decided to write an article about it and just absolutely nerd out about his game and House of Dragon. And it was a lot of fun for me. And then I got to talk about him with Nick too on the Deep Dive podcast. And he's been awesome, man. And I don't remember if it was Metcalf or Maxwell. I think it was one of the two who said in our group chat, he wasn't just taking threes. He was taking big boy threes. And that's
Maxwell.
It was Maxwell, right? He was shooting it from way outside. And that's the type of stuff that gets you excited, because not only did he make them, but he took them, which is, once again, very important, because the willingness to shoot from out there, the confidence to shoot from out there, is the type of stuff that you can get really excited about. And as you mentioned, Corey, to get 14 rebounds in a college game is not easy, considering how long they're playing, you know? So I think overall, man, if we consider all the different tools that he has, If we were to kind of like, I don't know, an analogy here would be like a baseball prospect where you get these, what they call quote unquote five tool guys, right? Brandon Miller, he's starting to kind of look like a five tool guy in this draft class because there are so many different layers to his game and different things that he can do well that you start to put that together and you're like, wow, this is a supremely talented player. And not just because he does one thing well, but he does so many different things well. Like I said the same thing on Nick's pod. I was talking about like the whole layers and stuff. And I really believe that with Brandon Miller, the layers,
it's a great analogy too. He's not just like a guy who's going out there and looking for, you know, to score points and just go out and shoot tough jumpers. He's like looking to be a complete player out on the court. And, you know, that's an underappreciated skill when you're a high level prospect who you want to be a complete guy. And that's why he's drawing comparisons to a guy like Paul George, you know, like that you're going to get that when you're that size and you have different layers to your game and you're able to create for yourself and others and defend a bunch of stuff like positions, and you're going to draw those comps. And it's lofty expectations. And can he reach them? Who knows? But he's got a hell of a lot of potential to do it. And he's showing that. And again, the competition, it's, you got to take that into account, but we're getting close. You know, if you're watching this live, you should go to our Twitter and find the link to the playback tonight and download the playback app and join us for the Champions Classic, which the No Ceilings crew, we're going to be doing both games. We're going to be watching it and calling the games live on playback. And if you're listening to this on your podcast feeds, then the Champions Classic already happened, which means that real deal college basketball games have started. So we're getting there. We're getting close. And we're going to start being able to nail down some of these evaluations a little bit more thoroughly. But to recap, we have Albert's team was Scoot Henderson at $5, Jarris Walker at $4, Khalil Ware at $3, Grady Dick at $1, and Jet Howard at $1. My team was Marcus Sasser at $1, Brandon Miller at $3, Khalil Ware at $3, and Jarris Walker and Keontae George at $4 each. So I had a lot of fun doing this. I think this is something we should do again during the next stock market update, because we'll also have a lot more to say about these prospects in an update, and we'll see how much our teams change, especially because the values of these guys are going to be different, and that's going to allow us to try to find value in different guys in that penny stock tier. But this was a fun one, man. So yeah. Albert, tell the internet where they could find you.
Yeah, you can find me at Alberto Gim. Alberto is spelled Albert OEGHIM is my Twitter handle, where you find me. I'm actually, by the time that this pod drops on Thursday, right? I should be dropping another article, another piece for our website. Gonna be writing about Cason Wallace from Kentucky, a guy that I'm going to try really hard to sell Corey on. Not that Corey's out on him, but he's a guy that I think is very interesting because he's not super interesting, if that makes sense. A lot of his game is very, it's not super flashy, but he's a very good player. So I really enjoyed him. And Corey, really quickly before we go, I didn't get to say anything on Sasser. I didn't feel like you really got to talk about it much either, but so far, from what we've seen with Houston and Sasser playing on that team. Well, I mean, he was on that team, but he looks phenomenal, dude. And I think your hot take is going to be one that we're going to have to pin somewhere and throw back in a couple of months, because he looks really damn good starting the season off. So I did want to throw that in there, that you looks like you're going to have a really good clip there to play in a couple months.
We'll see. He'll have to stay healthy, and Houston's going to have to, you know, not get knocked out in like the first round or something of the tournament. But I feel pretty decent about, you know, my hot take. All right. You can find me at Corey Tulliba on all the things, but instead of plugging all of the things, I want to shout out my guy Pee Wee the Plug and plug all his things, because I just did a podcast with my guy Combo on the Combos Court podcast with Pierre. So you can go listen to that. We did like a 14 pick mock draft where we went back and forth, and Pierre just is the realest dude ever, man. And he used his time on that show, not to plug himself, but to plug No Ceilings. And so make sure you go follow Peewee to Plug on Twitter, on YouTube, Through the Wire on YouTube, Through the Wire, the podcast. And because they are the dopest dudes ever. We got to hang out with them a little bit in Vegas for Summer League. And those guys have been like OG supporters of my stuff, of No Ceilings. And they're as real deal as it gets, just the coolest, most down to earth dudes. So shout out to Pierre, Peewee to Plug. Go there and go to NoCeilingsNBA.com. You can find all of our stuff. Make sure you tune in to the No Ceilings NBA draft show on Friday following us for Tyler and Tyler. And Nathan will be back on Monday with Draft Deeper. So we got 5 daily shows, daily content at NoCeilingsNBA.com. It's all free. Make sure you head there, subscribe, like, rate, all of the fun stuff. Until next time, we are out. Peace.
Peace.